I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're exploring the differences between the north and the south of Italy, and we're joined by two Italian guides and friends, Aldo Valerio and Riccardo Panareo. Our phone number is 877-333-7425. You can email us anytime at radio@ricksteves.com. Susan in Santa Cruz in California emailed us, and she writes, I try to get to Italy as often as possible, almost every year for the past decade. When I go, I make a big circle visiting both the north, where I have family, and the south, where I've come to love. The sense of humor in the north I find to be more subtle and dry than that in the south. The people are more reserved in the north. They have higher expectations that objects and systems should and will function. The cuisine is a little heavier in the north, but in general, it's wonderful. In the south, I've noticed they use gestures more. There are more lively interactions among the people, less insistence on following all the regulations, especially while driving. It seems like the farther south you go, the greater regard for generous hospitality I find, and the food is also absolutely delicious. The sense of humor is a little more slapstick in the south, and it's hilarious. Fascinating. Aldo.
I agree with her.
She nailed it.
She took the picture.
We love imperfection in southern Italy because something which is not perfect can make your holiday, your stay, a memorable experience.
And if you're looking for efficiency and perfection,
it's not
and
a holiday.
Order, you don't go to South Italy. You're going to be having frustration.
Definitely.
You have to celebrate the chaos.
Yeah, and we love it.
Well, that's we call it organized chaos.
Organized chaos.
How do you say that in Italian?
Chaos organizzato.
Marianne's on the line enjoying a little chaos organizzato here on the radio from Southgate, Kentucky. Marianne, thanks for your call.
Hello.
Ciao, Marianne.
I just called to talk about my experience when I did go to Italy. I have family, distant family, in a little town called Spinay. It's in the mountains, kind of in between Rome and Naples.
Okay.
And when I went, we only had 8 days, but a friend and I, we spent some few days in Rome and then took a bus tour down to Sorrento and Pompeii and Capri and just had a wonderful time. Everyone was so friendly, and there was a time in Rome where we were sitting waiting for a bus and didn't know which bus we had to take to get to the Colosseum, and this elderly gentleman walked up to us and just started serenading us.
Wow.
And that was fun, and he spoke very little English. I spoke very little Italian. But between the two of us, we were able to converse. And he, showed us to the right bus.
You know, Marianne, you sound like a person who's not very uptight, at least when you're traveling. And I think that's probably a key to enjoying Italy is not being uptight. If the bus is late, hey, you've got a lot of people here. Let's have some fun. Of any place in Europe, if there's a traffic jam, only in Italy will people pull the car over, open up a picnic table, and have a little party right on the roadside.
Yeah, it happens.
So it's an attitude, isn't it, Marianne?
Oh, yes. You just kind of, enjoy it, and if something goes wrong, you find an alternate solution. There was another time we got kicked off the bus, and we thought, okay, and we were like, what do we do now? So we just kind of walked around Rome and found our way back. And
yeah. You got to do that.
That was the most fun, just exploring on our own.
I think it's the right attitude. You know, I always tell to our friends when we tour Italy, one of the first things I tell them, listen, you're not going to change Italy in 10 days or 2 weeks, whatever. We are like this since 3,000 years. You think you're going to do something about that? So you just go with the flow. And actually, very organized people like American people remain surprised because at the end, in spite of the organized chaos, things go to place.
It does work.
You don't know how. We don't know how.
And also, Marianne, you have experienced our Italian philosophy, piano, piano.
Of course.
Yeah.
That means slowly, slowly. This is the way we
little
live.
Little by little. I was.
That's the way I would love to live all the time.
Well, not always we can go piano, piano. Because, but we try to.
Now you're in the European Union and people are going presto, presto. Huh?
Miss Angela Merkel doesn't want us going piano.
Okay,
piano.
So you got the Chancellor of Germany snapping the whip. Marianne, when you're thinking about all of this fun and going piano, piano, do you speak Italian or did you manage without speaking Italian?
I took a class before I went to Italy to learn some conversational Italian. So no, I really don't speak it. And what was funny, when I did try to speak the Italian, they would usually answer me in English.
Well, it's always like that.
These guys, I feel like I'm speaking in Italian almost here with my friends. I start picking it up and I start to sound like I'm an Italiano.
But you know, so sometimes you go to a restaurant and you open your Facebook and you try to do your best Italian, and then there is somebody from Chicago answering you.
Yeah.
Then it's a little frustrating.
Mary Ann, thank you so much for your call.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Happy
Ciao,
travels.
Marianne.
Ciao.
Ciao.
That is frustrating when you're using a phrase book and you want to learn and the waiter goes, okay, come on, what do you want? This is Travel with Rick Steves, and we're exploring the differences between the North and the South with Ricardo Panareo and Aldo Valerio. Ricardo and Aldo, you know, it's the economic crisis in Europe and everything, and people are starting to realize, hey, we need to pay taxes. And Italy is famous for having, I think, a little recreation in not paying taxes. And you've got wealthy industrial areas in the north and a lot of caos organizzato in the south. What is the situation with taxation and distribution of money between the north and the south in Italy these days? Ricardo.
Well, that's still an issue in Italy. Of course, now that we are in Europe, our friends in Europe, especially the German ones, they keep a close eye on us. So things are getting now, we are not as creative as we used to.
Yeah,
now
so
we have
more
to
seriousness.
Be. Oh, yes. Now things
because
are
Germans
getting,
don't want to pay your bill.
That's right. Basically, that's right. Let's say within the North or the South, you know, we are smart people all over, the North and the South. Maybe in the South, people take it a little easier than the North. Not because in the North we are better than the South or the other way around. It's just maybe because of the mentality.
It's a different tempo of life, isn't it?
Yeah, but still we have a long way to go.
But I remember, you know, you pay a toll to go on the freeways,
autostrada, like many other countries in,
the north, in
Europe.
But I remember there was a time when you did not pay a toll in the south.
That's the same thing.
And that was paid basically by the people of the north.
Definitely.
And even there was a cheaper gasoline in the south, less tax.
Definitely.
So there was that sort of help to the south. And the South has had a more difficult history, you could say.
I believe the situation in the South is also due to the lack of employment.
Yeah,
right. And we always have had. That's why we had so much immigration in the past, 20s
and 30s. Just there's not job opportunities.
No, in fact,
most American Italians, I think, are likely to be of Southern origin.
That's the reason why we invest a lot in education. When it comes to the North, at the age of 18, they don't continue the education because they know they can get a
job. There's a job
easily.
Waiting for you. And in Sicily, you would have over-educated people who just, there's no job.
Oh, definitely.
They have to go to the north.
Yeah. Interesting. Now, when you think about the passions of Italy, you got food, you got the Catholic Church, you got soccer. Is soccer a religion in the north just like the south?
It is.
Tell
it is in the
that.
North, it is in the south, I think it is everywhere. We love soccer. I live in Sicily, but I'm a great fan of Napoli. And that you cannot imagine every Sunday for us is like watching a mass, going into the church and praying the Madonna for the miracle. So this is the way we are.
Oh, so if you're going to go to church, it's going to be to play for
a miracle.
Oh,
definitely. We make promises.
Obviously.
My granny, she lights up candles the night before.
Your granny
I'm
lights
not kidding.
Candles for?
She wears the soccer t-shirt, everything. Yeah.
And what team is she rooting for?
Napoli. She has to. Otherwise, it will be an offense for the family.
What a question, Rick. You shouldn't be asking what team. My goodness.
And Ricardo, what is your team?
Well, I have to say that I'm one of the few exceptions. I'm not one of the great fans of
you're not crazy about soccer.
Soccer, no. I prefer the other strange ball with the two.
Well, with the
dogs.
Pointy ends.
Yeah.
American football.
Not really. We don't have it in Italy.
No.
We have rugby in
Europe. But, you
in
know,
Europe,
for a tourist to go into a stadium during a soccer game is an amazing experience.
Yeah, I made sure that some of the people in our groups took tickets because there are people from America that like soccer.
It's a great experience.
The last time we were in Florence, I got the ticket for them to go to see Fiorentina, which is the...
Fiorentina.
Well, so what do you think, Aldo, when you think Fiorentina?
I tell you in Italian, mamma mia, that means, and I'm not happy with that,
is
definitely.
That right? I feel like there's a, you know, there's a medieval-based grudge match between Siena and Florence, and it's fought out today on the soccer field, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
It is.
So this is really a fascinating thing. So soccer is passionate, Catholic Church, passionate, food, passionate. What else, Aldo, is very close to the heart of the Italian people?
For me, coming from the south, la famiglia. The family.
The family.
And that's what, going back to what you said before about the economy, unemployment, we got unemployment in the south, but we got a family to support us. if we are in a very difficult situation, the family is there. That's why we are mammoni, going back to what
That's
we said
right.
before.
So you don't put grandma and grandpa into a house somewhere and visit them only
that.
At Christmas?
No, we don't do that.
You have them right upstairs, huh? Ricardo, is that the same across Italy or does it vary?
Yeah, well, not so intensively like maybe in the south, but still the family is very, very important in the north as well. Yeah. You know, that's very, very important.
In fact, in my work, I've gone to so many, over the last 30 years, I've been going to restaurants and I've been going to hotels. And, you know, this might be Gino's Trattoria. And now Gino is barely able to walk and his kids are still there. Yeah. But they take care of Gino and he's still welcome there.
Yeah,
he's sort of the king of the place. And he shuffles around and grates the Parmesan cheese on people's pasta. And
it's a gratitude for what they have done to us.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
So
that's beautiful.
But, you know, we should go back towards the thing because in our civilizations, we are going to drop the senior citizens, you know. If you don't produce, you're finished. You're out.
Ah, yeah.
If you go to other continents, you know.
Other cultures.
Who is the chief of the village? The oldest person.
Okay, yeah. So, in some cultures, you forget what really matters and you value the person who...
The wisdom,
is the most
the knowledge.
The physical contributor. But in Italy, you remember the value of...
We are also changing like the rest of the world. Yeah. So we are gaining something, we are losing something, you know.
That's globalization, I guess, in so many ways. Ricardo, you've been going to bat for the North here. If a tourist from the United States is going to Italy and they want to really enjoy their time up in the North, what's one good tip that you would give them?
Well, you know, ask your George. I'm talking about Clooney. So I'm saying that one of the big attractions of the North is absolutely the Italian Lake District, from George. I'm sure that the ladies don't agree with that. But, you know, the lakes itself is really beautiful. All the Lake District is fantastic with all the background of the Alps that's, you know, you remain speechless when you're in front of that place. So
when we think of these lakes in the north, it is sort of where Italy is welded to the Alps. And you've got these gorgeous lakes. Every lake has its own personality.
Sure.
Which one does George Clooney like?
He is in Como.
Lake Como. Me and George, we're the same. I love Lake Como, too. Aldo, if you want to enjoy the south, what's your best attitude to take with you and what's your best tip?
I love southern Italy. I believe that it's got so much charm and so much history, but definitely Sicily. Sicilia.
Sicilia.
I like to say Sicilia.
Yeah, Americans are just going Sicily.
10 days in Sicilia, having a tour of the island. It's such a big island, discovering important archaeological sites.
And the irony is a lot of Americans think, Sicily, the organized crime, the Camorra or the Mafia or something like this. But when you go there, you find the friendliest people anywhere.
Oh, yeah. A couple of weeks ago, I had a passenger. She was asking me, I only came here to Sicily because I want to see the Mafia. And then I told her, don't expect to see someone wearing a T-shirt. I am a mafioso. It's not like that. It's changing a lot. It's working behind the scene, but we got it. But this is not the main reason why we need to see Sicily for this reason.
But for a tourist doing typical things, it's not
amazing.
An issue.
Maybe she needs to go to Zurich, probably, to see a real mafioso now.
Right.
Yeah, just come to my father's house, definitely.
The magic of Italy from north to south. Aldo and Ricardo, mille grazie.
Grazie a te, Rick. Ciao.
Thank you,
Ricardo.
Ciao, ciao.
Bye-bye.
C'è una persona senza fare nome che si permette troppo ma bagaglia.
One of the great joys of being in Italy is to see up close the great art and architecture from ages past. And that includes the Renaissance, which gave birth to so many masterpieces of Western civilization. During the Renaissance, Europe was home to less than 100 million people, and it was truly a small world when it comes to the big shots of history. Joining me right now is Jean Openshaw. Jean's the co-author of my book, Europe 101, History and Art for the Traveler. Let's take a look at the important figures whose lives overlapped 500 years ago. Put them all together, and it's almost like holding a reunion for the class of 1500. Imagine if Michelangelo, Leonardo, and Henry VIII all went to the same high school. Jean, think about it. All these guys, these like were cultural superstars. They're living at about the same time, and that all related to the Renaissance.
A single Renaissance generation, more or less, all of them living around the year 1500. You might even call it the class of 1500.
I can just picture it. Yeah, the yearbook there is Leonardo. Leonardo, cut your hair, you know?
Yeah.
So now, what is the Renaissance?
Well, we all think of the Renaissance as just art. Michelangelo's David, Mona Lisa, and so on. But it was more than art, and it was happening all over Europe. In politics, You're talking about the formation of nation-states. In religion, they're questioning church authority would become the Reformation.
That's right. The Reformation was the same time as Michelangelo and Leonardo.
And in science, you have the empirical method, new inventions.
Now, Florence was the epicenter of it all.
Think of Michelangelo's David. You're right at the Duomo, the big red dome in Florence. Right behind that Duomo was Michelangelo's studio, and he's chiseling away on David, which really was the symbol of the Renaissance. Everything started in Florence in the 1400s and then spread through Europe in the 1500s.
Okay, so around 1500, let's just say that's the general pinnacle of all this action. In the same time in London, you got Henry VIII and all the changes that Henry VIII was bringing to England.
And Henry VIII was considered, you know, we think of this guy as an old, fat, pus-ridden, paranoid old man. But in the early 1500s, he was the perfect Renaissance man. He was young, he was athletic, charismatic, scholarly, everybody loved him. He wrote music.
So there was this positive spirit, this humanism, this energy. And at the same time, you've got this demand for control and information welling up from the people. Martin Luther and the Reformation translating the Bible so people could read it in their own language, that was happening in the same generation.
Exactly. Martin Luther was, you know, at the time in the early 1500s, Martin Luther would have been in Erfurt in Germany. You know Erfurt. You love Erfurt.
I love the place. You've got all this thought of this little German monastery town standing up against the Roman Catholic Church.
And eventually he would go on and pound the nails in the Wittenberg church door and stand up to the Pope in Rome.
And at the same time, all these guys, Magellan, Columbus, and so on, Vasco da Gama, same generation, figuring out that there's more to the world than Europe.
The age of discovery. People bringing in new plants, new animals, new customs.
So now, all of these things were happening at the same generation. Was there an awareness? Did these guys, how did they connect with each other?
Some of them knew each other or corresponded, but they were all connected. You know, they talk about 6 degrees of separation.
Yeah.
You know, you could have a 6 degrees of separation that connects.
Connect me. Like, let's go from Michelangelo. From Michelangelo to Martin Luther.
Michelangelo to Martin Luther. They never met, but follow me here. Okay, so Michelangelo knew Leonardo da Vinci.
Uh-huh.
They both were Florentines. They competed in a painting contest. Leonardo was a musician. He played in parties for none other than Lorenzo the Magnificent, the ruler of Florence.
Uh-huh. And Lorenzo, his son was a pope. So
Lorenzo's son grew up to be Pope Leo X. And Leo X had to deal with radicals like Martin Luther. So there you got a connection right there. But there's more. You know, Leo X dealt with Martin Luther. He also dealt with a Florentine Niccolo Machiavelli.
Okay, so you're talking about how this was an age of more than just art. You have, like, Machiavellian politics, the ends justify the means, all this hardball stuff. And I know Henry VIII, from the same time, he was a fan of Machiavelli.
He did. Henry VIII considered himself a scholar. He liked Machiavelli. He also was into religion. Henry VIII actually wrote a treatise condemning the heresies of Martin Luther. And Martin Luther was friends with artists, like the painter Albrecht Dürer. And Dürer, his works were admired by Pope Leo X, the very man who had grown up with Michelangelo, who had corresponded with Henry VIII, and who excommunicated
Martin Luther.
Martin Luther.
God, there's like 80 million people in Europe back then in the year 1500.
But it was a small world.
Oh, man. It's always good to remember that a little art and a little history can add a whole dimension to our travels. Thanks a lot, Gene.
Thank you.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced by Tim Tatton with Sarah McCormick and Isaac Kaplan-Wolner at Europe Through the Back Door in Edmonds, Washington. We get technical help from Andrew Wakeling and Kate Mulhern-Graham. Our theme music is by Jerry Frank. Thanks to Aaron Harding and to the BBC in London for their help this week. Rick has also recorded walking tours to many of Europe's most popular destinations. Look in the radio section of ricksteves.com for a link to Rick's audio tour app. And we'll look for you again next week with more travel with Rick Steves.